the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
We are back. Yeah, welcome. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Got time for more of the best in money information. Can I say that? Sure, I can say it. I just did. I believe it's the best in money information. Here on the Bucket Strategy Investing program, I'm Johnny Dean. Brain Trust, in the form of Professor Plum, is standing by, ready to help you out this hour. Once again, Professor Plum here with me, ready to give you more of the best in money information. Rick's here from Lucia Capital Group. And this hour, oh man, we could talk for days and days about this because there are a whole bunch of different aspects to it. But we're going to focus for a bit on some of the major keys to developing what we believe is a successful estate plan. You need to be aware of things like probate, wills, you got trusts, you got taxes. We're talking estate taxes especially, beneficiary planning, AB trusts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and all the many arms of the estate planning creature. So doing it wrong may cause your heirs to miss out on what you intended them to have or whatever, maybe even not have. So you want to keep it right here for as much information as we can cram into our limited allotment of time on estate planning. That's coming up in the next couple of segments or so. Now, lines are open right now. You give us a call with your money questions. 877-PLANNER is our number. That's 877-752-6637. Or you just head over to our website, wealthed.com. You can send us an email there. We got a lot of emails over the last 24 hours, so we'll go over some of those. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Our big advisor on campus, that's right, Professor Rick Plum, joins us now from Lucia Capital Group. You need to get a strategy, okay? I've been telling you that over and over. You need one that addresses each of your needs. You have to get a strategy that aims to make sure your retirement goals are covered the first time. That's a bucket strategy, and the Brain Trust Advisors will put one together for you. You call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Talk to any of them about your financial future. Give yourself some measure, some peace of mind. 800-644-1150. Always better to have a plan than not have a plan. Our number here in studio, speaking of plan, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We got room on the phones at the top of the show, so give us a call. Any money issue that you have. Estate planning is on a lot of people's mind because most people have some kind of an estate. And most people have people that they would like to, receive at least a portion of their assets. And even if there aren't any people, there are charities. Something's got to happen to your stuff when you're gone.
Right. And I was actually speaking to somebody yesterday afternoon. They're saying, so what is the benefit to us? I said, well, to be honest, the benefit to you for your estate plan is very little because it doesn't really come into play until you're gone. Mm-hmm. The benefit for a proper estate plan is for your heirs, your successive generations, whoever it is that you want to receive the money. That's the benefit. There's only marginal or minor benefits, in my opinion, for the person that sets it up. Peace of mind is one of them. That can be a very large benefit for some people. But the reality is, we do estate planning not for us. We do estate planning for others. We're the ones, if we're going to do a trust or get the documents that John talked about, physician's directive, all those kinds of things, we have to pay for them, and we've got to do it while we're alive. So we're the ones doing the work. We're the ones making the payment for that. And we don't see the benefit of it because the estate plan only takes effect when I'm gone.
Exactly.
I won't see it. Now, but it is an important issue, and it makes life for the people on the receiving end a lot easier when it's done the right way.
Yeah, and I think people tend to know the first step, the most common ones. You say, well, you leave a will, okay?
Right.
You write a will out, you write it on a napkin, or you put it on an official document with calligraphy. I don't care. Whatever it is, you write out your will, and you say, here's what I want happen to all this stuff once I'm gone. Now, problem, not a problem, but one of the issues with a will is that it has to go through something called probate.
Yeah, a will does send the assets through probate. A will is just basically direction to the probate court on who you have said you want to receive certain assets. I want so-and-so to receive my stamp collection. I want, my bank, the rest of the money to be split 50-50 between my two kids. This is what I want to have happen with the assets I have, when I die. But how, and I mentioned this a week or two ago, how do we make that actually happen? I was talking about, if I wanted to give my car to John Dean, while I'm alive, I sign the pink slip, hand it to John Dean. He goes down to DMV or maybe someplace else, like a AAA or something, and re-registers the car in his name. But when I'm dead, how do I sign the property over to him? How does, you know, if it's a bank account, how does John go into the bank and say, oh, by the way, Rick's dead and he wanted me to get this bank account?
Yeah, here's a copy of his will, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, and the bank is going to say, well, come back with some more official documentation. We need somebody other than you and other. We don't even know if this is a valid will. We don't even know if this is the latest will. So wait until the courts tell us what's happening and then we may transfer it to you. That's what probate is. Probate is the movement of an asset from my name to somebody else's name after
I'm passed.
In other
words, it's the state, in essence, it's the state recognizing that what you said is valid, where you wanted this stuff to go.
And if I didn't say anything because I didn't get around to writing my will, they have a very strict set of rules about who gets the money. Now, depending on the state, it may go to the kids, it may go to the spouse, most of the time it goes to the surviving spouse, but it may go half to the surviving spouse, half to the kids. I mean, there's all these different ways to do it, and every state's slightly different. But every state has written a set of transfer, you know, issues about who gets the money. Now, whether or not they match up to what you want and you for who you want to get the money, you know, that's suspect whether it's the same as what you've already in your mind thought. But the whole idea is it still goes through probate. Now, every state that I've seen has a very simplified issue for going to a surviving spouse, generally, especially if it's first spouse, long-time marriage type things, where we have problems where we have multiple spouses, not multiple spouses, but, you know, maybe multiple kids from a previous marriage,
yes.
Current spouse.
Ex-spouses
as, yeah.
And ex-whatever.
Ex-spouses don't count as much, but kids from a previous marriage
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. I was going to say ex-kids. That's really not the case, no.
So how does it get divvied up? And then how do we actually do the paperwork? States charge you money for doing that. Depending on the state, probate can be fairly easy. There are some states, from what I have heard, Washington State is fairly easy on the probate, if everything is fairly straightforward. Where states like California, it's not all that difficult. It's a pain in any case, but it's expensive. And it's just an expense that in some cases you can avoid at least the majority of the expense. Now, the other thing is probate is based on the total value of an asset. Now, a lot of people in California, we have houses, and with those houses, in many cases, come big mortgages. Our equity may not be all that great. But we'll save a $500,000 house, which is about an average house in Southern California, and a $350,000 mortgage. The statutory fee is applied to the $500,000 asset, even though the equity is only $150,000. So from an equity standpoint, the fee is quite large.
Yeah, so avoiding probate is really one of the keys, I think, that when we mentioned keys to a successful estate plan, avoiding probate as much as possible.
Another problem.
And a will, as you've said, does not do that.
Another problem with probate is it's open to the public. Anybody can see what you were worth, financially meaning. And so the whole idea is they open it up and say, okay, this person's passed away. Here's what's going on. If you have a claim against the estate, bring it on so we can figure out who's actually supposed to get paid, who's got a valid claim, who doesn't have a valid claim. Let's go through this and make sure that it's happening. So if you don't want everybody to know what you were doing before you passed away as far as the financial side of life, probate can be very eye-opening for a lot of people.
Yeah. Now, not all assets are subject to probate, I would assume.
Well, no, not all assets. If you have an asset that has rights of survivorship, you own it with a partner with rights of survivorship, that's a titling issue. Rights of survivorship go right to, automatically, to the person that has that right of survivorship, regardless of what the will says, because it happens before the will. It's not a probate issue. The title says transfer it here. If you have a beneficiary assignment, I'm a single individual and I have no kids and I name John Dean as my beneficiary of my IRA. John just has to show up with a death certificate and say, hey, look it, I'm listed as the beneficiary, so let's transfer this into a beneficiary IRA. Nothing to do with the probate. Nothing to do with the state, nothing in that area. So if it has a beneficiary, life insurance, beneficiary, anything that passes by beneficiary happens automatically. Anything that happens through an operation of title, joint tenancy, with rights of survivorship, happens automatically. It is not an issue with probate, or it is also not an issue with the will. And so I may have a life insurance policy that says, I want Daniel, you know, as my beneficiary, And in my will, I say, John is to get all my assets, including my life insurance. Well, guess what? John is not getting that life insurance because it's going to the beneficiary.
Yes, because, and I guess this is because when you assign a beneficiary, it is now recognized by the state. You have actually given
permission. Out of my way
the state
to say
has says, yes, this is what's going to happen. So even if your will says something else later on, that's not official. What's official is the document that was signed by you.
Right, and that's where people get in trouble because they say, I'm going to leave it to my older child, and then they'll take care of the rest of the kids. Well, what if they get in a fight after you're gone?
And
doesn't have to be shared.
Exactly, and you've given control to the oldest or the middle or whoever is your favorite. And problems once again. Okay, 877-PLANNER. If you have questions on this or anything else, we're going to talk about avoiding probate as well. Something called a living trust. You probably heard about that. We'll tell you what that's all about. 877-PLANNER. Taking your phone calls when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Oh, the ideas are flowing here in studio. Welcome back to the program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, coast to coast, right here answering your money questions on Bucket Strategy Investing. I still got it, man. I still got it. Speaking of getting it and understanding all this stuff, including estate planning and whatever else happens to be relevant to you, a lot of this stuff is going to be discussed, I'm sure, at one of the upcoming workshops that are happening. The 2016 Lucia Capital Group Retirement Income Strategies Workshops, those continue once again. Now, the next one is going to be a week from tomorrow. Did I have that right?
You do have that right.
Yeah, that's right. I'm losing track of time. But a week from tomorrow, you're going to be in,
Scottsdale?
Phoenix. I was going to say, well, Scottsdale, it's Phoenix, but it's
Phoenix
really Scottsdale.
Area, yes.
Right. At the
J.W. Marriott Desert Ridge Resort.
It's always on the tip of my tongue.
That's anyway, a pretty nice place.
It is. It's a
there.
Wonderful place in Phoenix. So join the Brain Trust. It's Saturday, March 12th, there in Phoenix/Scottsdale. Get your money questions answered there and learn all about retirement income strategies. Challenges, too. Now, after that, there are a couple of more happening, as you saw there, if you were watching. Professor Plum, it's the 19th.
Portland.
After that is Portland, and then put it up if you would again.
And Houston after that.
Yeah, because I haven't.
Yeah, that one's in April. We do have a weekend off for Easter.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, you know what? Because the host doesn't have all the dates in his head. Just go to wealthed.com. Wealthed.com. Do know that a week from tomorrow is in Phoenix. There we go. Saturday, April 9th is Houston, Texas. Portland on the 19th of March, and Phoenix this a week from Saturday on the 12th. Once again, sign up. It's all free. Wealthed.com. Meet the Brain Trust, meet Professor Rick Plum, and any questions that you have. We're going to be talking about retirement income challenges and strategies and all that. But if you have questions on estate planning, Professor, we get those quite a bit, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, we do get a lot of questions on estate planning. But remember also that most financial planners are not attorneys, and they can only help educate you. They can't actually do the work.
Right.
And so always consult with your estate planning attorney for the fine, details in the estate planning area.
Yeah.
But there are lots of things that you need to understand about estate planning that you may not have to go straight to the attorney. Your beneficiary assignments need to be coordinated with what's going on with your wishes. And that's a big issue where we also see people try to basically shortcut the issue where they don't want to, go through a trust, don't want to do other things because it's a cost. So they'll do things like name one of the kids as a beneficiary of their IRA. And then they will instruct that child to, well, make sure you share it with your brothers and sisters or whoever else it might be.
Yeah.
Because that's real simple. That one person, one point of contact, everything works. Everything works until the person dies. And now the oldest son, the youngest son, the daughter, whatever the case may be, is the beneficiary of this entire IRA. Maybe it's, call it $300,000, and the instruction is to share it with their two siblings. Well, how do they go about doing that? They can put it into a beneficiary IRA. The siblings know that there's $300,000 there, and one third of that's $100,000, and they want $100,000. They forget that it's an IRA, and so when you take the money out and you share it with them, you're going to give them $100,000? No, because you got to pay the taxes on it, and you got to figure. And maybe you're in a higher tax bracket than them. The other thing is, you don't have to share it with them. It's your money, and if you've been
in
harboring
this particular example, yes, if it's not set up, right.
You're the beneficiary 100%. And even though mom and dad wanted you to share it with them, they're gone. And you're now remembering all those little mean things that your brothers and sisters did to you while you were growing up or whatever the case may be. And you're just, or maybe you don't like the person that your brother married or mm-hmm. your sister married, mm-hmm. and you don't. They don't deserve this money. Mom sure wouldn't have wanted them to have this money. If it's not set up right, there's a lot. It's amazing how much of that actually happens and
yes.
how much that goes on.
And you said that the person, you know, you don't care because you're gone when this happens. But honestly, I think if you were there,
it would bother you.
It would bother you. So if that kind of thing does bother you, you want to be able to set this up ahead of time. Now, one of the ways that you can do this, you mentioned having a will. You also mentioned on transfer on death and all this stuff, beneficiary designations, things like that. But there are some things that don't have beneficiary designations.
Most real estate across the U.S. does not have the ability to have a beneficiary assignment to it. There's only a couple
right.
of states that allow a beneficiary assignment on real estate. And for a lot of people, the largest asset in their estate is the real estate that they own. And so...
So what do you do? How do you get around this?
Well, a living trust will help. A living trust is a separate yeah. document that owns the asset from an estate planning standpoint. And unlike owning it directly and personally, when I die, somebody has to transfer that asset because I no longer have I'm not here anymore and I can't sign for it anymore. A trust has a triggering event like my death, and it signifies a new trustee who has all the power, and the new trustee can actually make the sign, you know, sign the documents and transfer things over. Because I don't own it, the trust owns it. The trustee controls the assets in the trust, and the trustee is supposed to follow what I've said is going to happen with that asset in the trust. And so it avoids quite a bit of the probate process. And because the trust didn't die, it's not open to the public interpretation. It's not open to the scrutiny of the public. Nobody can see it except for the beneficiaries and the trustee of the trust. So that it takes away a lot of the issues of the transferring process. But as I said before, this is something that I would have to do while I'm alive to help somebody out mm-hmm. when I'm gone. I don't really get the benefit of it.
And
they get the benefit of it.
And the assets in a trust are not subject to probate normally.
Well, no, because the trust didn't die.
Right.
And we don't have to ask the state who to transfer this to. We don't have to ask permission. We don't have to ask for approval from the state. It happens the way the trust does it. So that's why picking a trustee is important, too.
It is. Setting up a living trust. I mean, it's a process. It can be expensive depending on how much your assets
and how complicated you want to make it too.
Well, and that's where we get back to the issue of control, because when you set things up, Professor Plum, you can almost do anything you want.
You can write up, you know, the kids don't get anything until they're 50 years old, and then they get half of whatever's left, and when they're 65, they get the remaining portion, or the kids get nothing. And unless they quit smoking, quit drinking, you know.
Or don't marry this
Or get rid of, yeah.
Whatever.
We've had the questions on the air. I want my son or daughter, whichever it is, to be able to have access to it, but I do not want their spouse to get any rights to this money. I mean, don't want them getting it. And so how do we go about doing that? Well, you're going to have to talk to your estate planning attorney on that one.
But it can be set up.
It can be done. It's a little bit difficult. But you can be very, you know, you've heard of all the, you know, the movie stories. They've got to be married by 26 to be able to get, you know, they've got to, that's real. You can write that into a trust. It happens. But the more complicated you want to make it, the more expensive it's going to be. And not only to draft the document, but to manage it after the fact too, because you have to, that trust has to stay in force longer. Now, when my children were younger, I wasn't really, you know, that thrilled about them receiving the life insurance proceeds if something happened to my wife and I. When they were 3, 4, 5 years old, and then having unfettered control of it when they were 18.
That's you're saying if both your wife and you were
passed.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
a car, we go out to dinner in a car accident, you know, the proverbial Mack truck finds us. So we, living trust held the money and was able, if there was any money that, you know, that would have been if the life insurance paid off, that holds the money until the kids were older. Well, now that the kids are older, we don't need that same type of control anymore. I don't have any problem if any of my kids were to inherit $500,000, $1 million each, they'd be fine with it. They could handle it, even though they're not that old, but I trust them now. I didn't trust them when they were 15, but maybe 25.
You will trust them more in 10 years.
Oh, sure, I'm sure.
Believe me.
I look back at what I would have done the money at 21, 22. I may not have survived. I mean,
well, the money certainly wouldn't have survived.
No, that's true.
You would have had some really nice things, but the money wouldn't have made it. Yeah. 877-PLANNER. We will take your calls. We got some emails to get to as well. We'll do that sometime before the end of the show. But if you have questions on estate planning or anything else, doesn't matter, Social Security, retirement, annuities, insurance, We're here to answer them for you on the program. 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Bucket Strategy Investing continues. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean and a Plumster. I shouldn't say a Plumster. That's not right. Rick the Professor Plum. That's a little bit better. Answering your questions here on the program. We got a whole lot more to come, taking some of your calls and your emails as well. Lines are open right now. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We will get some of your emails a little bit later on this hour, and we'll cover some more of them next hour. Got a whole bunch of different topics on those. If you want to email us, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. But if you have any money questions at all, now is a great time to call. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. All right, we're talking about wills and setting up estates and all that kind of thing and avoiding probate. We've seen the importance of avoiding probate, if for no other reason than, number one, the cost.
Yes.
It can be quite large. It can take a big chunk out of the estate depending on what assets you have.
Time.
Managing your assets. Time, yes.
Time, publicity, and cost. Those
yes.
are the issues.
Yes. And the other part of this that sometimes gets ignored, and I don't know why, maybe because you have to have a lot of assets for this, has to do with the estate tax issues. Now, people, I think, are afraid of estate taxes because they don't necessarily understand what this means.
Well, and the majority of people will never face an estate tax. One of my goals in life right now is to have an estate tax problem. And the idea of an estate tax problem, now we're talking the federal level. There are some states that still have a little bit lower limits. But the federal one is the one most people are afraid of. And for a single individual, you would have to be worth in excess of $5,450,000 in 2016 before the feds levy an estate tax on you. Now, it is 40% of the amount over that number. So if you are over that $5,450,000 level, you may want to start doing some things, gifting or some other things, to try to avoid that potential 40% tax.
Yeah, it's a 40% tax if you on any amount
on the
of
excess.
Money yeah, that you either have in your estate.
And remember what your estate is. It's not just everything I own that's, you know, the value of everything I own. It's also the life insurance that I own on myself. Now, maybe I have a $1 million life insurance policy that I control, I direct who the beneficiaries are, I'm the owner of it. The cash value may be $50,000 or it may be term, and there is no cash, so there's no value to it while I'm alive, but it's $1 million when I die or whatever the number is. That's part of my estate. I'm directing it to go somewhere. Therefore, it is part of my estate, and so that increased the value of my estate. And so, unfortunately, for a lot of people, the life insurance creates a tax. They didn't have any estate tax issue until the life insurance paid off, and now they're over the limits. It's less likely today than it was, you know, a decade ago, where the limits were $1 million or so.
Or when it was 600.
Well, that was back in the 90s. It was $600,000. Yeah. Like, when the estate tax limits are a lot lower, then we used to do some trust work for estate tax planning. But one of the things that the federal government gave us back in 2010 was something called portability of the estate exemption. I can be worth up to $5,450,000 and not pay any tax. The problem in past years was if I was worth, you know, my wife and I were worth, you know, $10 million, I die, I can give any amount of money to my spouse, assuming she's a U.S. citizen. Bill Gates can leave 100% of everything he owns to Ms. Melinda, and there is no estate tax. Now she's worth the entire fortune. The problem in the past, before they brought up this portability issue, was I didn't get to use my $5 million exemption, my $1 million exemption, whatever the exemption was. So if I was worth $10 million and I died and I gave everything to my spouse, now she by herself is worth $10 million.
But the estate tax exemption.
Before, I was worth five, she was worth five, and it, without portability, now she's worth 10. If she dies, there's $5 million over the exemption, basically. She has to pay estate taxes. So they did some fancy trust work where we put my assets into a trust for the benefit of my kids. But it's a way of using it. Now with portability, it doesn't matter. If I die, whatever portion of the credit that I don't use, as long as my wife files a return appropriately within 9 months, she can take over my unused credit, my $5,450,000 exemption, and stack it on top of her $5,450,000 exemption, thereby giving her the ability to unfortunately pass away with up to almost $11 million in her estate and avoid the federal estate tax issue. That portability has really been a nice thing. Now, it doesn't mean that the old AB trust is dead. It doesn't mean that you should never have an AB trust. There is still a control issue. One of the reasons for that split was the estate tax, but another reason for the split was so that my assets go into a trust that I designate the beneficiaries, and my wife can't, change those beneficiaries, my surviving spouse, or if your husband, whatever the case may be. They can't meet somebody new.
Okay, yeah, let's pick up a situation where this, so that it doesn't get too abstract.
I was speaking with an attorney the other day, and first time marriage, the wife in this case passed away at a relatively early age, in her late 50s. And, she didn't have any problem leaving the money to the husband in this case because he was never going to disinherit their kids, right? I mean, they would never disinherit our kids. Well, as time went on after a while, Dad kind of, after the death of his spouse, kind of pulled back, a little emotional time. And there was almost a rift between him and the kids for a little bit. And then he, a couple years later, met this nice new lady and married this nice new lady. And everything got changed. And now all the money went to take care of her. And if he dies, his kids are getting aced out of everything. Mom's assets, his assets, they all go to this new lady and her kids. She had younger kids, and he's looking to take care of them. And the kids from the first marriage are like, wait a minute, what about us? In that case, the AB trust would have helped. Dad could have only given away half the assets because the other assets were in the trust. And so control is an issue. And the reason for a trust is there's twofold reason. It used to be threefold. Now it's twofold. One is avoiding probate. The other is control. Either one of those reasons is a good enough reason to have a trust.
Now, okay, so you threw out this number, $5,450,000.
That's what it is for 2016.
Every person, every citizen or whatever,
every
resident has a $5,450,000 estate tax exemption.
Right, so basically the first $5,450,000 is exempt from an estate tax.
Right. Now, by the way, 877-PLANNER, our number. We'll be taking your calls in just a little bit. 877-752-6637. Lines are open if you have questions on any of this
stuff. And again, that's just the federal one. There are states with lower limits that you would have to, look at your state to determine whether or not it's a big enough number that you want to try to avoid.
Right. Okay, so you have that, but you also got gifting issues. People with a lot of assets think, well, why don't I just start, rather than die and leave it to somebody else and allow the estate taxes to take care of it, why don't I just start handing it off to people while I'm still alive?
Well, you can. I mean, so if you wanted to, you can start giving away assets. Now, if I'm worth, $10 million and I find out that I have a bad diagnosis and I'm only going to live another year or two, I can't give $5 million today and then give another $5 million at my death and say, well, there's no estate tax. There is a unified exemption. The unified exemption is for gifts during my life that would be considered taxable gifts or inheritance. The combination of the two of them cannot exceed the value of the exemption in that year, either the year that you made the gift or the year that you died. They kind of go hand in hand. So if I give $5,450,000 away today and then die in December of this year, I don't have money in my estate that I can give away anymore because I've already used up my exemption. Now, that $5,450,000 gift exemption does not include the $14,000 a year we can give away to anyone, any number of people that we want. That's a different issue. There's two types of gifts, taxable gifts, non-taxable gifts. Non-taxable gift, up to $14,000 a year per person. I can give $14,000 a year to everybody I meet, and as long as I don't give it to them twice, there's no reporting, there's no estate tax, there's no gift tax, it doesn't go against my exemptions, it's just a non-event. But when I go over that number in any given year, then I'm starting to use up that $5,450,000 exemption limit.
Yeah, and it starts to eat into it. the first $5,450,000 is what the government says, well, we'll pay the estate tax for you. That's sort of
right. There's a credit for the tax on that $5,450,000.
But if you go over the $14,000 to any one person in any one given year, it starts to eat into that just a little bit. And you're supposed to notify.
You're supposed to notify the federal government with a gift tax form. Now, if you're worth $150,000 and you're giving your son or daughter $50,000 for a down payment, well, that's over the $14,000. But the IRS really doesn't want to hear from you. Because you're never going to get to an estate tax problem.
No, I mean, technically,
wish we were.
You're supposed to let them know. And this goes into the whole idea of gifting, which is another topic that we could probably cover for a long time, and we have in the past. Okay, I'll tell you what, we got some folks on hold. I want to. We had a couple of estate planning questions. Actually, hold on, Mike in Minnesota, I'm going to go to you next, because I know you have an estate planning question. We're going to stay on topic here. So please, just a couple of moments here, if you would. We'll give you enough time to ask your question and enough time for us to answer it as well on estate planning. We have a couple others after that that want to ask similar questions. So hold on. We'll go to Mike in Minnesota next when we come back. We have two lines open right now still. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, the Brain Trust, talking to you about your money when we come back, Bucket Strategy Investing. PLANNER, having some fun on the program here with you and Professor Plum and me, Johnny Dean. Got another hour coming up, so if you're if you missed anything this hour, you missed out on a lot, but we got more coming up next hour in most cities around the country. So stay tuned, if you would, 877-752-6637. I will let you know a little bit about the Social Security guide that you can download. So hang on, we will mention that. That's at our Facebook page. If you go there now at Wealth Ed, you can check it out for yourself. Want to get to Mike, though, next in Minnetonka, Minnesota. Hello, Mike. How can we help you today?
Good afternoon, guys. Long-time listener. Thanks for your show.
Sure.
Susan and I have been, we're approaching that $5.4 million mark. I was 62. Sue's about to retire. I am already. But the kink in our armor may be this, is that we never bothered getting married in those 30 years.
Okay.
How'd that affect us?
Well, you have certain assets, and she has certain assets. So you're not going to be treated as a married couple. So the key here is you don't have an unlimited lifetime, unlimited marital deduction, giving money back and forth between spouses. But if the combined value between the two of you is $5,450,000, then we're not all that worried because we've still have some room to go. What if you looked at just the assets that you owned? What are you worth?
About 2.4.
Okay, and then so she's worth about 2.0 or sort of 2.9 at that point. So if unfortunately you died and you gave her 2.4, you could win the lottery for another $3 million and still not have an estate tax when you gave it to her.
Okay.
Now the only problem is then she's got more than 5.4 million, and she'd have to start spending some money. That's probably going to happen anyway, right? I would if I inherited money. It's 5.45 million each. Not as a couple, that you have to start worrying about the federal estate tax.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. I really enjoyed the show. Thanks so much for your
help. You're welcome.
All right, Mike, thank you for the call. Yeah, it's per person $5.5 million. Now, even if it were, of course, the problem is here, I guess, it does. You do actually have to be married.
Well, you don't have to be married. He can die and leave her 100% of the money.
No.
And there's no estate tax from the federal government there because he's worth less than $5,450,000.
But
she's got $2 or $3 million. Add the two and a half that he gave her. She's worth $5.5 million. Heaven forbid she dies. She's not going to, her, whoever she gives it to isn't going to pay a tax because she's under the $5.45 million. The problem is if they're worth too much.
That's what I'm saying. If
and
they're
the
worth
combined
over there.
Value goes over it, and she doesn't spend it down quick enough, or the other way around, he doesn't spend it down quick enough, there might be an estate tax on the second death because we don't have the ability to stack each other's.
Portability goes away, is what I'm
portability
saying.
Portability is only between spouses.
Yeah.
And they're not spouses.
No. Although I guess now he said they've been together like, what, 30 years or something, a long time.
So? Never made it official.
Arguments have been made that, you know, in certain cases, not necessarily with regards to taxes, but it was sort of a de facto marriage, that kind of thing. It hasn't worked.
Ask Lee Marvin and his
Michelle Triola, you mean from the 1970s?
The 70s or 80s, but yeah.
It was about 1979 or so.
I don't know how Minnesota will look at the if there is such a thing as a common law marriage in that state. It's not as popular or as common as many people believe. California, where most people believe common law marriages exist, doesn't. It doesn't exist there. There is no such thing in California.
Now, on this, we've heard of something with regard to estate taxes, tax issues, and all that, something called marital deduction.
Marital deduction.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about earlier with Bill Gates.
Yeah. That's really what this whole thing is about here.
So when they calculate the estate tax, they take everything that an individual owns, and they add it all up. And let's say that I am worth, you know, $20 million, and my wife is worth $20 million. And we take my estate, and we add it all up. And the first thing we're going to do is we reduce it by any amount of money going to charities, and then we reduce it by the amount of money going to the spouse, because it's a deduction to my taxable estate, any money that goes to my U.S. citizen spouse. Now, a non-U.S. citizen spouse has a different issue. They don't have an unlimited marital deduction. You can only give them, you know, they're part of the other class of $5,450,000.
That's the Q-dot.
Well, that's where strategy. A Q-dot would have to come in.
All right.
But it's a matter of what is reducing my estate before the estate tax is applied. So they look at it, I gave my wife $10 million of the 20. Now I'm down to a $10 million estate. I gave $5 million to charity. Now I'm down to a $5 million estate. Now they apply the tax and the credit to the remaining $5 million. I don't owe anything because it's under $5,450,000. But if I didn't give the $5 million to charity, now I have a $10 million estate that went to somebody other than my spouse. They calculate the tax, take away the credit, and I still owe some tax on that one. So the unlimited marital deduction has to do with how I give money, or the fact that I can give money, any amount of money, to my U.S. citizen spouse.
Okay.
Now, somebody may ask, why does it matter if it's a U.S. citizen spouse or a non-U.S. citizen spouse? What the U.S. government does not want to have happen is for me to leave my giant estate to somebody who's a foreign national who's married and living with us here and U.S. resident, but now they're worth 20, 30, 40 million or more. And they move back to their home country, and the U.S. doesn't get any of the estate taxes from my money. That's what they're looking at. They want to get that estate tax. And so they're going to either get it when I give it to the spouse, or they have to do some fancy work, and he or she just can't take it to the foreign national.
No, country, they have what's country. Called, we mentioned a Q-DOT, it's a qualified domestic trust, QDT or QDOT.
QDOT.
Q-DOT is what it is. And that's sort of...
That inherits the money. And so if I wanted to leave my non-U.S. resident or non-U.S. citizen spouse $10 million, the money would go into the Q-DOT, not to her personally. And anytime it left the U.S., that's when the estate tax would be applied.
Exactly. There's more to talk about on this stuff that we should get into. It has to do with step up in basis and things like this. I mean, once again, the whole idea of estate planning, this could cover about 50 different programs. Well,
it's part of financial planning because you do want to look at the assets that you have, how they're going to be passed on to the next generation, who should receive the assets, planning for income taxes, especially in surviving spouse situations. Who should we be spending our personal money now or our IRA money now, depending upon what's going to happen in the future with a surviving spouse? And so a lot of that comes into play.
Yeah, it does. So if you're able to tune in the next hour, as I said, in most cities around the country, you will get our next hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. I almost said the name of the show. It was like 15 years ago. What's going on today? I think I need to take a top of the hour break. In the meantime, we've got more coming up next hour on this program. You can talk to Professor Plum or any of the Bucket Strategy Advisors at Lucia Capital Group, Brain Trust Advisors, at 800-644-1150. That's their off-air number, 800-644-1150. They'll talk to you about your retirement plan. Another hour is just ahead of Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.